And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and Laurent Landis has the weekend off. Our guests are from Educare. We'll talk about them in a minute. Patty, you almost killed yourself last week. Congratulations, you didn't.
Thank you. I'm so alive and I'm so blessed. Thank you.
Yeah. She was on her way to Austin. She didn't really want to get there in time, so she had a blowout on the highway and made herself very, very late because Aaron had to go down get her. Did Aaron come with you down to Austin? Did you ever?
No. She was staying, and I was going to run down and because she had a commitment on a Sunday. So I was going to run down. My cousin was getting a sort of a lifetime achievement award working with kids. And so I was going to go down and celebrate with her. And had this blowout right outside Waco.
You know, it's a good thing it was Waco, because had it been like between Waxahachie and Waco, there wouldn't have been anything there. So it happened right in Waco. It didn't happen in Austin. Aaron had to come get you, so she didn't have to go 180 miles. She only went 90 miles. So,
yeah, it was pretty good. And I get to the dealership where they towed my wrecked original Prius. And it was late in the evening, or late in the afternoon, I should say, and they were closing for Saturday. And the owner there said, I said, "Oh, you're Baylor?" I said, "Class of 84. And he said, "Class of 83. Oh. And so he says, "I'll just wait with you." So I didn't have to stand out in the heat until Aaron got there.
Oh, very nice.
So that was cool, and a cool connection.
So am I the only one who pointed out everybody else was, "Oh, Patty, you could have been, as long as you have your health, it's just a car, you can always replace a car," right? Mm-hmm. Am I the only one who said, "Yeah, you did it because it made you late"?
I am the only one.
I am the only one who had that kind of stuff. Okay. One other thing before we get to our guests. Have you noticed the war on Labor Day?
No.
Oh, yeah. All week people were saying to me, "Have a happy holiday." I was very offended.
Wow.
People were saying, "Have a happy holiday." Were you noticing that too, Biv?
Yeah, it was. I mean, and I thought, why can't they even say Labor Day?
They can't
anymore?
Say Labor Day.
Is that because labor is a bad word now?
No, I don't think they know which one it is. So a lot of people mix up Memorial Day and Labor Day, and if they don't know, they're just going to say, "Hey, happy holiday."
I think they know what 4th of July is.
Well, when do they?
Independence Day.
When do they have their children if they get mixed up?
I don't know.
On their
question.
Children's birthday?
On Labor Day.
It's
our guests are from Educare. We're going to talk about what Educare is and all the things they're doing for our community.
And what you could possibly do about David.
What you can do to help Educare is what I was going to say. But, yeah, that too. Because they're looking for all kinds of stuff from everybody, so listen and see if there's something that you can contribute, because they're doing really a wonderful job on this thing that most of you will be doing, which is getting old. I keep getting left back.
Mm-hmm. In school?
No, in age. Our guests are Sharon Fine, Vivian Armstrong, Harriet Cohen, John Steele, and Mike Grossman. Welcome, all of you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, David.
Let's start with Sharon. Sharon founded Educare. Tell us a story about how you came. First, what Educare is.
Educare is a 501c3 nonprofit. We are an ally LGBT group, working together to take care of the older communities in our city.
With a specialty in the LGBT community.
Yes.
How did you start your organization? Because there wasn't anything out there like this.
No, definitely not. It's based on two facts. One, I'm a primary caregiver for my mother with Alzheimer's disease, and it's a challenge. And I was working in our local healthcare community as well, so here I was caring for my mother and then caring for everyone. And I saw things that in my heart and in my mind and soul and spirit said, there's something that has to be done to make this better. One is looking at older LGBT adults and how they have been treated marginalized here in Dallas. My commitment comes to the older population, LGBT, comes from a friendship from kindergarten. and the loss of my best friend to AIDS in the 80s he passed away. And he was harbored, hidden by his family, so nobody knew he died until it came out on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
So to, in his honor and in his memory and in my loss and the want to see things different for people, that was what fueled me for wanting to have EdgeCare, to take care of older adults and to take LGBT older adults, and then to take care of the caregivers that are caring for them.
So how do you identify there's nothing for the older LGBT community out there? How do you get going with something like that? Because there are a lot of you people.
There are a lot of us people. Yes, we know.
You're talking about older people.
I'm talking about older people, yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of older people. Well, you know, as I firmly, firmly believe that working together with allies and the professional community is going to make a change or change the course of the way things are being done throughout the country for cultural competency, and that's what we're about. We want to take people that are working in any kind of health care outlet, whether it's a hospital or a facility or home health or non-medical home care or placing people, and we want to ask them, what do you know and what do we need, and then go in and bring modules of training to them.
Now, a couple of years ago, I would have said, if you're a healthcare worker, you are the kind of person who, when you see somebody who's sick or needs care or needs help, you will help them. And then was it North Carolina or Mississippi legislature passed a law that, well, for religious reasons, you don't have to help a transgender person. Huh? People, and we've been hearing these stories, people are going into the closet because the type of care that they're getting when somebody who works in their nursing facility, there's a big lawsuit up in Illinois about this that Lambda Legal filed.
Yes.
They're treating her terribly. And I mean physical abuse, mental abuse, everything. She's isolated.
Verbal abuse.
Nobody in the nursing home will talk to her. Huh?
See, this is what I always fear, is not just for elderly people, but especially for elderly people in our community. And that's not the fear of outright discrimination. I would rather someone turn me away from all services than to give me marginal service. You know, and I think that's what a lot of people fear when they go to a physician or they go to any sort of healthcare provider, is that they're going to just sort of wade through it.
Where they kind of act like there's an odd smell in the room. Mm-hmm. Their face has that look.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Or even when you go, like, to get your car serviced, maybe you're going to deal with a bigot, and maybe they're not going to really fix it. You know what I mean? It's that midpoint where, I mean, I'd almost rather them say, no, I don't want to touch you. I don't want anything to leave.
And you have to figure out, is it because you're a woman? Is it because you're lesbian? Is it because you're older? In terms of what kind
exactly
of discrimination.
And exactly what it is. So one of the problems is that people are going back into the closet, which might be fine for one of our guests, might almost be fine for you, Patty, because you did not come out at 5. But Vivian, can you go back into the closet?
David, I have said, in thinking about this and looking at the fact that, you know, Louise and I turned 69 this year, and, you know, she has some health problems. I had my hip replaced, you know, a year and a half ago. And Louise is right there, and, you know, before you could even open your mouth, when soon as they walk in the room, you know, Louise is declaring who she is and our relationship and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, whether you liked it or not, you heard all about it, and she was there to stick up for me, even though I was kind of, you know, down in the bed. But if I had a stroke and Louise was not there with me anymore, the first thing out of my mouth when I look at those people and I don't know who they are, you think I'm going to end up saying anything about who I've been? Uh-uh.
Well, and we have a problem of if you move into a facility, you know, and you want to make that room or that space your own, do you take the pictures? I mean, it's the same thing that we dealt with in younger times about taking pictures of our partners, spouses, into work, you know, or do you talk about over the weekend they or we without ever using a pronoun? So if you've been with someone for 30 or 40 years, your whole history is in pictures and in words, a we.
And that was Harriet Cohen. Before that was Vivian Armstrong. They're both founding board members of EduCare. Okay, Harriet, my experience, my husband had to go into Baylor in an emergency. It was about a year ago. And I dropped him off at the door, ran, did a couple of things, and I was coming back. And he checked in and said, my husband will be here in about an hour. At Baylor, they were fine. They were great. I told them who I was. They, he's waiting for you. I'll show you the room. They were great. It could have been not so great.
It could have been not so great. I have also had positive experiences. My partner of 26 years died 2.5 years ago after being in and out of the hospital a number of times. And I never left her alone because I wanted to make sure that she was treated correctly. At one point, she was had been given the wrong medication and didn't know who she was, and usually was fairly quiet about our relationship. But when the series of neurologists and psychologists came in and pointed to me, they said, do you know who she is? And she went, yes, she's my partner. Do you have a problem with that? which was certainly a humorous moment in a very serious time. But there are people who have not been that blessed, that fortunate to run into.
Viv, do you remember how we kind of sued Parkland because they were leaving meals for people with AIDS outside the door?
Yeah. And you know what? A parallel to that could be you're in a living community facility, but your room is all the way down at the end of the hall, and they come down there and they clean it, and they see that you get your meals, but you're down there all by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had a situation recently where a transgender individual was in a nursing facility. That individual had dementia and forgot that he was transgender. Mm. And it was the staff that was trying to be supportive, but had then no earthly idea how to work with this person, because it's not only the cultural competence, but it is also knowledge of Alzheimer's and working with people with Alzheimer's. Oh, so it really is that intersectionality every time. Of disease and person and culture.
Okay, so I like that one, because I would have no idea what you do either, other than treat the person like a person, and you give that person the best care that you can possibly give that person. I mean, to me, those are not difficult things to do. Let's do a little bit of cultural competency training. What do you train them to do in a case, in an Alzheimer's facility, with a transgender person who's forgotten that he or she has transitioned?
Well, in terms of working with Alzheimer's, and that's an area, we were talking about that coming in. Alzheimer's is an area that is almost a special case in and of itself. I was the executive director of the Alzheimer's Association in Atlanta for 6.5 years, many, many years ago. You treat people as human beings. You start where they are and listen to what's going on with them. So in that case, you would take the cues from that person and not try to say, yes, but don't you know, you're now him and not her. And as we say in working with transgender, what are the pronouns? What are the names that they use? Mm-hmm. And be right there. If you try to do any kind of, well, you said this yesterday doesn't mean anything to a population that has a progressive neurological disease.
And thank goodness they've been talking lots of advances in Alzheimer's care over the last couple of months.
David?
Yeah, and this is Mike Grossman.
We learned recently from a panel of medical professionals that transgender people have different have had hormonal treatment and different kinds of treatments, and therefore their blood work and so forth has to be done differently with different kinds of tests and so forth. Mm-hmm. This can be a particular problem
sure.
for someone with Alzheimer's or someone who's unconscious or someone who's in a state of non-reality.
Well, or not getting their hormones like they should in order to keep it up.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is where I can see that
it's against my religion to give you hormones that change your gender.
No, I can see it being a problem with some people who just didn't know.
Right.
I mean, because it's so mm-hmm. specialized. The number of people who have come out as transgender over the last few years has grown exponentially. The Williams Institute in California has mm-hmm. just doubled their estimate of the number of transgender people who are out there. So that one, I'm not as worried about the religious person who's going to refuse service. I'm worried about the person who doesn't know those kinds of things because their intention is good and they're going to deliver good care. And that's that's the low-hanging fruit in a way. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guests are from Educare, and I'll introduce them on the other side of the
break
because there are too many of you. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Hey, guys. I'm Stevie Curvin, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Laurent is off today doing family things.
I assume so.
He might be in labor.
He might be. You never know.
Our guests are from Educare. Sharon Fine, who founded Educare. Two of the founding board members, Vivian Armstrong, who's been on our show many times and always wonderful to have you back. Harriet Cohen, John Steele is also on the board, and so is Mike Grossman. Welcome to all of you. We were talking a little bit about cultural competency training. Some of it seems obvious, but actually there were a couple of things that, you know, I guess I knew what to do. You just treat a person like a person, and sometimes that seems obvious, but is there something special we need to do? And Mike was saying, for a transgender person, they need to know that their blood work has to be done differently. If you don't know that, you just don't know that. That's nothing insidious. That's nothing, that anybody's trying to hurt anybody. We have enough of that. Have you run into any of that where they've been where there have been healthcare workers who have been absolutely, it's against my religion and I'm not taking care of those people?
We have not encountered that.
And you work in the Dallas area. You'd be less likely to hear unless you...
I think we find that the healthcare workers and providers in the Dallas area are very welcoming. They just lack the vocabulary and the knowledge so that they're more timid about approaching subjects that they don't know anything about. And they don't want to make their clients feel uncomfortable, which I think is part of what we do.
Well, and again, that's a good thing, that if they know that they don't know how to say it, and they're a little bit timid about it, that's where you can add the knowledge. What are some of the things they might be timid about? What are some of the things they might be a little bit timid about training, talking to a person about, or that your training would fill in?
Well, even how to refer if they see a picture of someone in there during a home visit to deliver meals or healthcare services. How to say, oh, tell me about, who's in these pictures and what do they mean to you? Instead of saying, do you have children? Are there children in your life who are significant to you? Instead of saying,
do you have a husband?
Instead of a husband, are you married?
do you have a husband, do you have a wife, are you male, are you female, you know, is to...
How bad do you have a spouse? Would that work?
Well, but the reality is that many of our older LG, particularly, population may not be married. So
or may have already lost their spouse.
Or they've already lost.
Comfortable with the term husband or wife.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so listening, asking open questions, tell me about the people who are important in your life, gives them the opportunity to say, my partner or my friend or whatever, and then you have their language that you can use to interact with them.
Okay. What are some of the other things that come up in cultural competency? That's just the basic meeting the person.
So another thing that we want to emphasize is that the common experience that the LGBT older adult population has had is the experience of oppression, discrimination, marginalization, depending on when they came out or made the transition. And so to be aware that this is a population that may not have been accessing the healthcare system, social service providers, because of fear of marginalization and discrimination, and so may not have worked with the healthcare provider community, and being more aware of that, and that it might take longer to build a level of trust.
How about or had a really horrible lots of experiences with the healthcare system during the AIDS crisis?
Or had, yes.
Because there are lots of us who are my age. Most of you are aging and will need these services. Those of us who aren't, you know, we're lucky.
You were like three during the 80s, right? Four, maybe.
Well, no, I was older than that, but...
David, a reverse mortgage does not apply to age. It's just for the mortgage, okay?
Okay, as I like to tell
you, Vivian,
people, you can change your birth year on Facebook just so many times, and then they don't let you keep doing that. However, my Facebook profile shows that I graduated from college, then I was born, then I moved to Dallas.
But you know, that's actually one of the things that's a problem in our community, is the fact that we deny aging. We are very youthful-oriented, and we don't want to admit that we're getting old, that maybe we need a little help here and there, and we stay at home and we deny it until there are crises. Yeah. And there have been a couple of notable crises in our community, trying to find somebody to be able to take care of somebody who doesn't have any kind of support system.
Private caregivers.
And it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that, you know, we have got to admit the fact that, you know, hey, it's okay for us to get older. You know, older gay people, you know, Sage calls them elders, you know, we call them older adults. You know, whatever you want to call them, it's okay.
Sharon and I just call them alt cuckers.
There we go.
Me too.
Yes, you do, but you're going to be there yourself. And
well, and actually, I've had this discussion with my cousin's kids, mm-hmm. and I've told them I plan to be a very great burden to them.
There you go.
They love me for it.
That always builds trust and a warm welcome.
Yeah, really. Yeah. That's the last thing I ever want to do.
What are the types of facilities that we're talking about, and the types of, it's not just facilities, but services that people would be accessing as they're getting older?
Long-term care facilities, mm-hmm. assisted living, independent living, memory care, nursing homes, non-medical home care, home health care, hospitals.
Hospice,
especially hospice. Really any kind of direct care service.
Rehabs.
John, can you think of anything
else?
Residential care homes. Really anywhere where your health is a concern and there are hands involved. Mm-hmm.
And it can also be at home. I mean, you mentioned home health care. But what we know is that early intervention helps to keep people at home. So recognizing that there's a problem and maybe bringing in Meals on Wheels mm-hmm. so that the person is getting good nutrition, or bringing in a friendly visitor so that they're not isolated in their own homes, are services that can help prevent premature or inappropriate nursing home placements.
What do you advise older people do to check out the home health care service? You know, Patty and Aaron both getting much older and probably are going to need some of that in-home care very soon.
I'm glad you have them as an example.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks, David.
You're welcome.
If Aaron were here, it would be not those words.
I can imagine. Aaron and I have a very special relationship. But an older person or couple, what should they do when you're going into a nursing home? You expect the state to be taking care of that and monitoring what kind of service there is there that you will get the health care that you're supposed to get. And I'm just talking about the health care. How do you know that the people coming into your home are safe to have in your home?
Let me, I know you're getting ready to say something, but what I was going to say is that one of the problems that we face with the older LGBT community, as opposed to the heterosexual community, is that there are fewer family members to take care. So in heterosexual couples, families, when there's an aging person, there are usually children that are there or a spouse to care for that person, to come in and provide the care. The research shows that with older LGBT, that there is usually more isolation and fewer support system folks. So creating that system to help people stay at home is something that we want to help encourage. We saw that with the AIDS crisis of support teams that came together. Now what happens often is that your support, your close friends are aging themselves.
Mm-hmm. And it makes a difference to have that kind of support. And I think kind of on a flip of that, we see and I just know this anecdotally, there may be data on this, but when an LGBT adult's parents, one or both, need care, many times the other siblings say, oh, we'll let the LGBT person handle it, you know, because they don't really have a life.
We have kids and you don't.
Yeah, so. All this stuff. And so they get sent, you know, it's kind of expected of them to do all of the caretaking stuff. But I did want to make a point. I worked, the company I work for that I've been with almost 20 years, early in time, I was going to Canada quite a lot, and we were writing a home care software for them. And so it was amazing to me. I mean, their big goal is keep you out of an acute care bed at all costs and keep that independence and supplement that independence. It was just amazing to me the programs that they had in place to do that at every little nook and cranny. You know, but one of the things I thought was so interesting was if you had a family member or a good friend who was your caregiver, the government paid you rather than pay a home health person to come in, like a sitter or whatever.
That is one kind of service that's available if you want to operate that way. The problem sometimes with that is, what is their competency for care?
Right.
Do they know how to transfer? Do they know how to feed somebody? And, you know, it could be a tube. You know, there are risks.
Sure. Absolutely.
Well, the VA has aid and assistance, which, you know, can allow you to pay, you know, an informal caregiver to do that kind of service. And then you can get client-directed services under Medicaid in the state if you're, in fact, qualified for that kind of help. And, you know, the thing is that, quite frankly, a lot of our people are low enough income or close enough to it that they could get that help, but they don't even access social services enough to know that there are some government programs that they would qualify for. The Meals on Wheels could be paid for by Medicaid through the state and that type of thing, so that they could at least get, you know, one hot cooked meal that they can supplement with, you know, cereal and sandwiches at least. And they don't know that. And the thing is that part of what we're doing is trying to educate the social services folks, too. We work with Senior SOARs and educated their nursing home ombudsman volunteers and ombudsmen that go into those facilities on a weekly basis, and they're there to help advocate for the residents. And so they have at least a little bit of knowledge right now, and it needs to be added on to. But, you know, we're trying to reach out to those kinds of, you know, community council, area agency on aging, to be able to let them know, you know, that we're here as resources for their staff and to get their staff up on terms of what to look for and how to work with LGBT.
And I would say currently, almost on a daily basis, I will get community calls asking my parent, my partner, my brother, my sister, my mother needs this. What do I do? So it's, and they're in a hospital, and they're going through, you know, they're getting let out. They're going home, and it's, you know, Friday, and what do I do? How do I, what's the first step? So it's almost as if it's blind aging. We have really no clue. Really what people have no clue is what are the services in our city, and there are services in our city that we can refer to and call. And because John and I have currently been working in our local healthcare communities, and we're in and out of facilities, and we're working directly with referrals to different organizations and different companies of care, whether it's non-medical home care, that are LGBT-owned and operated in our city, and we have relationships with them, or John's a senior placement advisor, so he can help somebody find the right place to go to, you know, assisted living, memory care, the CC, you know, the full curriculum of care. We get those phone calls.
When I was looking for a place for my father, his doctor called, said, I'm not releasing him. He cannot be on his own anymore. Mm-hmm. We knew that he was dealing with some Alzheimer's already. And Patty is helping me with the mic. Yes.
Helping.
And so I got to the hospital. They gave me a piece of paper with a list of names and addresses, and I got in the car and started driving. First three that I went to, I walked. First one I walked in to, I walked in, turned around, walked out. I said, no. Second one, I said, hell no. Third one, it was like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? Fourth one, fifth one, ugh. It was like the sixth or seventh one that I walked into, and they were wonderful. I mean, and that was, but that was sheer luck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and when there's no advocate for that person, that's when there's a big problem. Mm-hmm. Even the most wonderful, just like you've had in a hospital, the most fantastic place needs a watchful eye.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always there. It's not always available.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, by noon that day, I had said to myself, okay, so he'll just come and live with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did that actually with my mother with Alzheimer's mm-hmm. disease. My mother did live with me for 2 years, and then because I have a job and it was an unsafe environment, we went through the same process and went from place to place to place. And she was in a place, and I was in that place every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day. Questioning and asking, backing up what they're doing, looking at her medical records, looking at her medication, because it was always something. And then she was not released back to that after rehab, and then went to residential home care, which is a really good solution for a lot of older adults now.
So. And my father just didn't want to move to Texas. Aww. So it was his decision to stay there.
Of course, independent.
But we found a wonderful place.
And because Texas.
Yeah. Well,
it's Florida.
It was Florida.
Yeah.
Lateral move.
Well, there's no place like home. And so you want to try and stay in home if you can.
Right.
And then if you can't, you want to find the next best thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Why don't we take our break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guests are from EduCare, and we will be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this. Back to Lambda Weekly. I heard Mike. I thought that was another PSA that ran because I'm not getting that to work today. This is Lambda Weekly. I am Dave Taffet. I'm here with Patty Fink. Our guests are Mike Grossman, Vivian Armstrong. I'm going around instead of on my list. Sharon Fine, Harriet Cohen. Oops, I skipped John Steele.
Hi.
But I did get all five names.
Yep.
I did good. Yeah. We're talking about some elder care here in Dallas and an organization that is trying to make elder care safe, welcoming, a good place for LGBT people to live. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah. You know, David, if I may, I think the thing that drew me to get involved with EduCare was the fact that many gay and lesbian people, as they age and they need facilities, they need care, they need whatever their needs are, they tend to go back in the closet. And I think that's a tragedy. They don't want to identify themselves because they're afraid they'll be discriminated against.
Well, that was my question. I wouldn't know how to go back into the closet.
Well, I wouldn't either, but many people do. You know, not everybody, I guess you could say, is as out as we are, David, but
and have as big a mouth as some of us here in the studio have.
Right. Patty. So giving cultural competency training to the healthcare community, no matter what area of the healthcare community they're in, so that people who need their services don't feel they have to be in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a very important issue and a very important issue for our organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what we're really asking is that everyone be treated with respect,
mm-hmm.
And receive compassionate care, not special care, compassionate care. And that we believe that if providers and professional staff and caregivers are trained to give compassionate care and respect to LGBT, that it will impact the quality of care of everyone that they're serving.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm one of the people that does the cultural competency training on LGBT issues with the Dallas Police Academy, the Dallas Fire Rescue Academy. And so we cover a lot of things. And we stress that, too. Respect, dignity, professionalism. And when you meet those things, then you've covered a lot. And we know that there are people out there who have been raised, or they have acquired somehow attitudes that are contrary to that. And we just, you know, emphasize that there's a standard that the city of Dallas has. And you either meet the standard or you don't. And if you don't, then you'll need to go. You know, so if you need to do more work than the person next to you, then you should be, this class will help clarify that, you know.
Language matters. A lot of it is language. If you use the correct terms and know what they mean, and you don't use slurs, and that has a lot to do with it, because you're talking with someone else. And if you use the right language and you listen, that's 90% of it right there.
Absolutely. And, you know, and we train folks to, when in doubt, if you're not sure a person may be trans or gender nonconforming, and say, ask. Just ask them. And they're going to be more impressed to be asked, that you ask the question, than if you make the wrong decision, you assume the wrong way, and you just carry on without acknowledging that you don't know. You know? And so, you know, a lot of people have come back to us over the years and said, that really works.
But don't you think that it's good that you're giving them permission to ask, because a lot of people don't want to ask because they're, well, maybe I'm supposed to know that.
Well, that is the main purpose for the quarterly meetings for Bridge Building Network, is to invite all communities in and given an opportunity to ask questions, mm-hmm. in a protected, safe, comfortable environment.
Right.
I think that we accomplish that every quarter.
So those are held when?
Those are quarterly meetings. The next one is November 15th. It's an RSVP.
And Senior Source is on Harry Hines.
Yes, Senior Source is on Harry Hines.
You need an RSVP, so there'll be food there for you.
Food,
there's food, there's wine, there's tea, there's water, there's, you know, good food and good company.
Yeah, and we'll watch Jen Cookies. We'll watch Jen Silent, which is really an East Coast vision of what's happening nationally. So sometimes the Southern perception is left out of really what's happening in the deep South, which is why we emphasize this program more than anything else, is to come and see what's here. I want to make this important point. It's what drives me personally. I really think any kind of training and any kind of positiveness that we'll get out of this is coming from a place of compassion. I think bulls in china shops and making communities possibly feel like they haven't done the right thing is not the right approach. Because I am an ally and I'm inside of these communities constantly, all the time, I know there's a way. There's a way to get to the hearts and souls and minds of people. And it's not by being, you didn't do this and you didn't do that. Mm-hmm. It's by, here's what we have. Let's have an opportunity. Let's share and let's get some training done here.
I think the exciting thing is that as different from the AIDS crisis, when we had to provide the services within the community because there wasn't a lot of support from the ally community, that and I came out way back in the 70s, so it was a very separatist, you know, lesbian separatist was politically correct. But now what's exciting is that we are, as we said before, you know, kind of the LGBT and allies working together. There is this growing ally community that wants to be involved and wants to help, and I think that's the only way we'll be able to make significant change.
And John, you were going to say something before the two women next to you on what you had to say.
No, I think that one of the real strong aspects of our organization is the fact that we are allies in the GLBT community working together. Mm-hmm. And when we have these quarterly meetings, it's so inspirational. We send out invitations all over the community throughout the different suburbs of the DFW Metroplex, and we get healthcare providers coming in because they want to see the movie Jen Silent. They've heard about it and they want to experience the lives as they are aging and what they're going through. And then we have question and answer after that, after we have supper. And then we are prepared to take the modules that we're preparing, the educational modules, into their workplaces and help train their staff and providers.
Now, anybody can go to these, though.
So everybody's
your
welcome.
Website is what?
Educare Dallas. EDUCARE Dallas.
.org?
.com.
Okay. So educaredallas.com, and all the information is there. You can RSVP right there. But somebody might be listening and say, oh, I have some questions. My partner is getting older, and I have some questions, and I'd like to speak to somebody. This would be a good
We've had numerous people from our community come who are, you know, in the aging process, and they're curious. They've heard about it somewhere, maybe people who are listening today. And they, you know, just kind of want to come and see what it's all about. And that's, we welcome it. We also welcome more volunteers. We've been preparing modules that provide continuing education contact units for varying levels of professionals, from administrators, nurses, you know, therapists, physical and social workers, all of the above. And the thing is that this is a way, you know, for people who are in the professions to get acquainted and set it up. But it's also for, you know, partners, family members, you know, it's open to anyone.
And just for an example, or two examples here, I had a lesbian couple call me probably 2 months ago, and one of them was had become very ill and was not able to remain at home any longer. And they needed a safe environment, a safe place to go to. They're out there, but finding them, that's the thing. And so, and then another example is I have a client who is in an independent living community in Dallas, and he's unable to drive. Every Friday afternoon, they transport him over to Woody's for happy hour, and then pick him up and take him home again.
That's awesome.
There are some really good situations, but it's not knowing how to find them. I'm going to give you a number for EduCare. Help is available. It's 214-263-2826, and that's a cell phone, and it's EduCare, and we can provide help.
Would you read it one more time, the number?
It's 214-263-2826, and also we have our email address, educaredallas@gmail.com.
And you can get all this information on the website,
absolutely,
which is educaredallas.com.
We are also preparing to have an appreciation celebration for our sponsors and volunteers and supporters of EduCare. It's going to be Wednesday, September the 14th at the Bridge Bistro restaurant over in the Design District. We're going to have complimentary hors d'oeuvres, iced tea, a cash bar. We're going to be giving out door prizes, and it will be a great time for people in the community to mix and mingle and get to know us and what we're doing. And we would like to get to know more members in the community as well.
Well, and some of the providers, sponsors who've been very supportive of us, so that, you know, that's the first step, really.
And once again, you have an event, you have food. You have drink, then you have a place to talk and share. This sounds great. I mean, this is for anybody who wants to get involved.
So we expect to see you there.
Yeah, this is good stuff.
One other thing that you do is a compassion fatigue symposium. Tell us quickly what that is.
The Compassion Fatigue Symposium is an annual CEU certified program that's also open to the public that, and I'll hear talks and works with professionals and personal caregivers that live with compassion fatigue. And what is compassion fatigue? If you're caring for somebody more than you're caring for yourself, you most likely are living with that. You generally tend to be the last who gets any care while you are caring for the world, your parents, your loved ones. That's everyone. Compassion fatigue lives in
everyone's body.
You know,
and so many people in our community know what that feeling is because they worked for the Buddy Project that Oaklawn Community Services put on that helps people with HIV. And you adopted somebody and were with them till they died.
Mm-hmm. So the program invites a professional who specializes in compassion fatigue. And then the program has modules of healing that's built into it so that you could have, I call them, your back pocket tools to pull out when you're feeling like you've become nothing and the world is everything.
Right.
So we want to help caregivers learn self-importance without guilt, exercise self-compassionate care so that they can continue to have the strength and the energy. We want to avoid burnout, and if you take knowledge and you take the information in and you put yourself first, you should be able to achieve that. The next Compassion Fatigue Symposium is April 21st, 2017. It's a very, very reasonably priced. There is a small fee. We don't make money. We support communities. Last year we had 657 people in attendance.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's something.
Let me tell you, I love going to those. I've been to a couple of them, and I have learned so much. And one of the neatest things this last time is I learned about drumming, and we have these little drums, and it started out like, think about your heartbeat and drum it. Dub, 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 dub. You know, and then, you know, I can't play a flute, but he could, and it was just, oh, I mean, we just had such a wonderful time in that module. And to learn all the different aspects of ways to take care of yourself, from meditation to laughter, yoga, all kinds of cool stuff.
You know, we have I'm an election judge in my precinct, and we have one voter that comes every election, and we always ask, how's your mother? Because she's taking care of her elderly, very elderly mother who has Alzheimer's. And so we said, well, how's your mom? And she goes, oh, she's fine. She's fine. It's the rest of us that are not really fine. You know, and I thought that was so very well put, you know, and so descriptive of what, you know, she and her family are going through.
And, you know, statistically, a lot of times, caregivers in those situations die before the individual does.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Wow.
We want to avoid that. So this is a tremendous opportunity for you. You can contact us, too, at educaredallas@gmail.com. EDUCARE Dallas, all lowercase. Love to share with you what we're doing with this symposium. It's going to be great.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being here today. This was wonderful.
Thank you.
And we just barely scratched the surface. We could have done the whole hour just on cultural competency, basically. There's so much involved there, you know.
Right, and even as Cannon Flowers had pointed out from the Coalition for Aging LGBT, is the silver tsunami coming, and that we can't build our way out of this.
One other quick advertisement. Remember us, North Texas Day of Giving, September the 22nd. We're out there. We need your financial support a little bit, too. Thank you.
It does not have to be a tsunami, because we need to be preparing now. We should not be taken by surprise. We know what the demographics are. We know what the statistics are. And it's time to start planning and be proactive now for the aging community and the LGBT aging community.
Well, Mike, John, Harriet, Sharon, Viv, thank you so much for being here. Come back.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Great show.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week. Our guests, we're going to be talking Gertrude Stein and
David's having a memory issue.
I know. It's a literary show next week. We'll see you then.